And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donnick, and Jace on this overcast day. We're downtown Nashville, Pete and Terry's Tavern, right here at Bridgestone Arena. You know what that means. Predators are back at home after that overtime thriller in Tampa where they beat the Lightning. Tonight, it'll be the Chicago Blackhawks. Boo. It hasn't gone away. I still feel like booing every time I say the Chicago Blackhawks.
It shouldn't go away either.
Some people think it's not the same. Well, still the same in my book. Doesn't go away overnight, that's for sure. So it'll be the Blackhawks tonight, the Calgary Flames on Thursday night on Halloween to close out the month of October. The Predators have a big announcement today at 11:30. We will carry that press conference live. David Poile, the general manager, normally... since we don't have a cough button, you'll have to probably get used to that.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
I can go get you a cough button. I know where one is.
It might be handy.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll do that for you because I know where we keep the cough buttons in Bridgestone Arena. I do.
David Poile normally joins us at 11:15, and we will move him, push him back an hour, so it'll be 12:15.
Yeah, what's he
today.
Doing? What's he doing? You got something going on today?
Clearly, he's going to be talking at 11:30.
I wonder what about.
Well, I mean,
it's a major hockey announcement.
It's pretty easy to connect the Roman Josi dots. I mean, a major
announcement. I was going to say there's 59 dots you can connect.
There you go. That's a good line.
That's what I was going to say.
I would tell you there's 9.5 million dots to connect.
It's a lot of dots.
That's north of 9 million, by the way.
That is north of 9 million, and those up to the north are reporting that it's 8 years north of 9 million.
North of 9 million.
We're funny.
By the way, if it is, and I was just joking around, I don't know, but if it is like 9.5, I said 9.25 the whole time. That was been my number, 9.25.
And I think
so. I would not be surprised.
Didn't Willie say 9? You said 9.25. Then I went 9.5. So we were all around it essentially.
I think that sounds right.
And Elliot Friedman reported in his 31 thoughts and then told us his first appearance of, you know, 9. He thinks there's going to be a 9 and, you know, in front of it. And that's everything that's being reported right now. Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, they're all putting that out there. But here's what is, I guess.
It'll be a max deal.
Yeah, it's a max deal. But here's what's surprising to me. It's being reported by a lot of those same sources that Roman Josi is getting a full no-move clause, which – we know the Predators usually don't like to do. They did it for Pekka, and that's it.
Yeah.
And there's a limited in the last 3 years of the deal with Duchesne, but according to Pierre LeBrun and others, it's a full no move, which means for those of you that aren't familiar with that, the player, Roman Josi in this sense, cannot be traded, put on waivers, sent to the minors without his approval. So he basically can say, nope, not going to do it, and – the Preds have to honor that. That just shows you, in my mind, if that is true, and again, nothing official yet, that just shows you how much they think of their captain, that they're willing to do that.
So, but it shouldn't surprise any of us who've been around him at all that that would be the case. He's the real deal. He is one of the best. By the way, speaking of that, the Predators have recalled Colin Blackwell from Milwaukee. So seem to be giving some guys in Milwaukee shots at, taking in a game or two. They had Anthony Richard for Saturday down in Tampa and sent him back. And
yeah,
I guess it's Colin Blackwell's turn. So they just they recalled him. anybody who's been around him, I mean, it's, you know, everybody knows that he's one of the best defensemen in the league, and it's not even close. I have always said for years I get it. He's good. In my mind, this is just my opinion, I have always felt that he is a smidge overrated. I don't believe he's as great as everybody has made him out to be over the years. If you were asking me who I would take, and I've been pretty consistent on this, I would take Josi over Carlson all day, and clearly the Predators feel the same way. And I think in the end, that Carlson deal for the Sharks is going to end up biting them. It's just not going to be a good deal.
No, I agree with that. And, you know, I look at this deal. Listen, any type of max deal, you know, for that many of years and money, could come back to bite you. That just that's the risk you take because you never know what's going to happen with injury and things like that. But for this deal, I think we all felt like Roman Josi had earned it and that he was going to be rewarded for his hard work. David Poile typically likes to reward those that have grown up in the organization, the draft picks. I mean, essentially with this deal, Roman Josi can play for one team his whole career if both sides want it that way. And with the no move clause, I mean, he has much more control of that. So, you know, I think it's exactly what he deserved. And, you know, that was going to be the price of doing business. And I'm with you that the Carlson deal, I think looking at some research on this, I believe he's going to be the third highest paid defenseman with this deal. So, you know, I think sometimes markets overpay.
That's what I'm saying. It's not – I've always – you know me. You've heard my message. It's not everybody else's job to – just because somebody else overpays somebody, it's not your job to match or go higher than them just because somebody else got a bad deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowed to say, you know what, we don't agree with that deal, and you overpaid. You're going to have to deal with that. Our player is special too. We think he's better than your player. I get it. He deserves more than you, but you should have paid your player a lot less. That's on you. You know, and so I've never understood that. And I know players just want the most. I get all that, but it's just like we talked about the Todd Gurley deal. It's like, you know, you're not obligated.
I feel like hockey players are a little different, though.
Yeah,
there are some that, yeah, they want the most. They want the money. You know, they want to have the highest paid. I think for somebody and you know, look, I don't know. I'm not trying to speak for Roman Josi and put words in his mouth, but I feel like he wanted to be here, wanted to stay here. He's said that before. He wanted a fair deal, but at the same time, I think it was like Ryan Ellis. He wasn't going to be like, no, I 12 million or I walk. Like I never felt like it was going that way with him. And you know, we were all, you know, kind of all around it, saying 9 million, 9.5, somewhere in there. You said 9.25. That's been your stance. So, to me, that's fair. And, of course, the max, 8 years, which you can re-sign a player to that's on your team. And now it's done. Now David Poile can start to look at the rest of this roster and what else he needs to do moving forward.
Or what he'll have to do in the offseason. But it's still way too early to be talking about that.
Yeah, but...
Because something, I mean, they'll have to be changed. I mean,
I've
been saying it for a good while. Like, you can't give everybody max deals for $8, $9 million. Like, something will eventually give. The dam will eventually give, right? Water's going to get through, and so you can't, when you're already, and I realize this contract doesn't kick in. Ryan Ellis' new deal kicked in.
Yep.
You know, so that won't kick in until next year. But we got a long ways to go to, before we talk about all that, but something, you know, there will have to be changes. There's no doubt about it. And there's guys who have pretty hefty price tags that will be free agents. So they'll have to make tough decisions.
And that's kind of what I was getting at, because now he has a starting point because he knows what it, at least right now, what his budget is going to be, because that was the biggest contract. And he had to take care of that before he could really do anything else. Now I think you'll see him start to evaluate of, okay, Mikael Granlund, what do we think about that? Craig Smith, Austin Watson, Rocco Grimaldi. I mean, those are the other ones that are going to have to be addressed at some point. Don't have to do it tomorrow. But, you know, that's just something that David Poile will look at eventually. But, you know, that's just kind of the nature of doing business. That's part of his job. And he'll join us today at 12:15, and I'm sure we'll get into all that.
We will. Actually, yeah. we will get into all that for sure. 12:15, David Poile, like I said, will carry that press conference at 11:30. So obviously we've had to do some juggling on the show whenever something like this gets dropped in your lap last minute. So we do a little juggling act. Mitch will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll just talk a little college football with him for a segment or two and kind of lead things along the path. Derek Mason will go run West End at 1 o'clock. So we got a lot of things to get into. It's been a while since I've been to the arena, or it's been some hours since I've been to the arena. Last night, got a chance to check one off, right? When you go to a lot of concerts and the older you get, sometimes there's just shows you're like, you know, I'd like to see them before this is it. It's kind of like when I went to Kiss. You know, I said I'm not going to pretend I was the biggest Kiss fan or am the biggest Kiss fan. I appreciate what they've done. And, you know, it was their last deal. I mean, they're all right. seven in their 70s, 70, 72, yeah. And it's like that was it. So I wanted to go. See, Elton John I've never seen. I had already seen Kiss, but I wanted to see him one more time. So Elton John I'd never seen, so I got the opportunity to go last night. So packed house here at Bridgestone Arena, played for almost 3 hours. By the way, the tickets at 8 o'clock. He had no opening act. He was on the stage at 8:06.
Nice.
And I said, I will take that all day long.
Yeah. Wow. I saw.
Now, believe it or not, the most punctual band we've seen
was
the two of us, which is insane to say out loud
yeah.
because of their track record and their history over the years. Guns N' Roses yeah. here. I mean, they were on the stage at 7 o'clock. It said 7 o'clock, and they were on the stage at 7 o'clock on the button.
Huh.
Axl Rose. And remember, luckily, we have been tipped. Like, they will be on stage at 7 o'clock, so we were in our seats.
Right, we knew.
Unfortunately, thousands were not because they were thinking the same thing we would have been thinking if it wasn't for the tip of, hey, you're going to need to be in your seats by 7. A lot of people are like, it's Guns N' Roses. Come on.
Right.
I get it, 7. They're not going to be on stage at 7. They were. But he's played 25 songs last night. Started off the night with Benny and the Jets. And ended the night with Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, of course,
the
farewell tour for Yellow Brick Road. So that made sense. But it was fun. It was a fun night. Everybody was just in a good mood when you left. I saw the movie. Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. It's good. It's really good. And so it kind of puts his life in context. He talked about it last night, talked about how he's been clean and sober for 29 years, almost three decades.
Wow.
And how he, you know, his life spiraled out of control and how he lost touch with reality and just everything. He got caught up in, you know, his fame and fortunes and, you know, what a lot of people do, right? We talk about it all the time. Everybody acts like it's, until you've walked in those shoes, you have no idea how you handle it. You think you may know how you'll handle it, but
you never know.
If you've never walked into those shoes, you don't really know how you will handle it. But nonetheless, it was a really, really good show last night. I was glad we were able to do it and had a lot of fun. And so that was it. And by the way, he had canceled a show on Saturday. So a lot of people were like,
And this is the second, it's the same tour, but he played last year too here. So he did two shows
on
the same tour.
Yeah. And I think he's about to head back overseas again.
Yeah.
I think he's going to go Germany and Australia and all that here soon.
Wow.
And then he'll return back to the States, I guess, in 2020. So pretty long tour for Elton John as he wraps up his Hall of Fame career. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side on this Tuesday morning. ESPN 102.5, The Game. I'm sure Roman Yossi's been playing this song all morning long. It's appropriate. Press conference at 11:30. We will air that live. Speaking of that, hey, Preds fans, don't forget Smashville Live, another installment, is tomorrow at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. That's in East Nashville, not far from here, located at 1003 Russell Street from 7 until 8 o'clock. This week's guest are players Ryan Johansson and Colton Sissons.
That'll be good.
That
a couple
should
of
be,
BC guys.
Should be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
First 50 people have an opportunity to get an autograph or a picture with those guys. Fans can register and win two tickets to an upcoming Predators home game. Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. So go out there tomorrow night from 7 until 8 o'clock. Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House there in East Nashville. It's on Russell Street. It's always a fun night.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing it last week. So.
Yeah. I did one last year, and it was Ryan Johansson and Roman Yossi, ironically. So today, tomorrow night, it'll be Ryan Johansson and Colton Sissons. So you got a chance to watch last night's game? I'm sorry.
I know.
I have a friend. You could have turned away.
Well, but see, I was being a good friend because somebody I know is a big Dolphins fan, and just ride or die. You know, they're gonna.
Is that serious? Are you making?
No, I am. I'm very serious.
Yeah.
So one of my really good friends is a Dolphins fan. So she was like, "Let's, you know, will you go watch the game? It's Monday night." And I'm like, "Sure." Now, you know, good thing there was beer and food, and so, you know, it was good, but. Then when they go up 14-0, I'm like, oh, hey, look at this. Look at this. And she just looks at me and goes, I'll give them time. They'll screw it up. And they did.
Yeah.
So tank for Tua continues.
Yeah. When they were up at what point? What? How much was it? 14-3? Is that right?
Yeah, 14-0.
Like that. 14-0.
It was their first double-digit lead of the season.
Wow. Still lost. Man, they're just bad. Bad, bad football team. I don't think Pittsburgh's particularly good either.
Right.
To be quite honest. The Chargers have cut ties with their offensive coordinator.
Uh-huh. I saw that.
The Wizenator is no more in L.A., so Ken Wisenhunt has been shown the door. They just come off a big win.
Yeah.
In Chicago. That's kind of strange.
The timing was very strange on
that. Yeah. I mean, if they would have lost again, okay, I get it.
He was a holdover from McCoy's staff, I think. Stayed on with Anthony Lynn when he got the job. And a lot of that had to do with his relationship with Phillip Rivers because, you know, he was the OC and then he left, came here. That ended poorly. And then he went back to the Chargers. And I guess something was off and they needed to make a change. But, yeah, Ken Wisenhunt out of a job. And I know I was watching Twitter last night. I know there were some Titans fans that – had some thoughts on that.
So. Did you have any?
I did. Yeah.
What'd you tweet out?
I tweeted a GIF of Marcus Mariota doing a fist, like a touchdown, and then shaking the fist. So, listen, you know, because that was around the time that I started producing the midday show, and I remember that day vividly. That we're getting, you know, I'm getting ready for the show, and you call me, and you tell me the Titans just fired Ken Wisenhunt, and that was. One of the craziest days I can remember because that's pretty much all we did. But I think a lot of people would agree that he tried to turn Jake Locker into something that he wasn't, and then he tried to turn Marcus Mariota into something that he wasn't. And he was a prime. And I was actually tweeting back and forth with Bernard Pollard last night that he was a prime example of the type of coach and OC, head coach and offensive coordinator that you're going to run my offense my way, and he's not going to adapt to the type of player that he has. It worked with Phillip Rivers because that was perfect.
Yeah.
But with quarterbacks like Locker and Mariota, that just wasn't the case.
Chargers were averaging 19.6 points a game, which was ranked 23rd in the league. So I guess Anthony Lynn saying that they need a change. In fact, he said, you win as a team, you lose as a team. It's never about one person. At the end of the day, however, simply felt a change was needed at this time. I want to thank Ken for his years of service, and we wish him the best in his future endeavors. They didn't really say that, but pretty close to that.
I mean, don't they always say we wish him the best in his future endeavors?
Yes.
It's kind of implied.
Uh-huh. We're going to find out here today if there's any chance 9 and 95, who were not in the lineup on Saturday night and down in Tampa, which made the win even more impressive.
Yeah.
We'll kind of find out if they are inching a little bit closer, any chance anybody returning. I'm talking about Matt Duchene and Phillip Forsberg, who Phillip has now missed six games in a row.
They have an optional skate today, so I don't know.
It'll be hard to tell
really
anything.
Learn too much. Wonder if Roman Yossi's going to skate. Is he going to take the optional skate today?
He's going to skip.
You're going to skip, put a suit
Not
on?
Skip skate, but just skip on the ice.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. Maybe dance.
Do a happy dance. Maybe
I
make
would
it
be.
Rain.
If the reports are true, and if I signed a deal like that, I would be skipping.
I would
be dancing.
You know, we get to deal with these guys a lot. Roman's awesome. We love Roman. Roman is one of the easiest players to deal with. But this guy goes from making $4 million a year now to a reported over $9 million a year. Like, just how do I get that? What do I got to do? I know I'm never going to make it in this business, but with that kind of money. But come on, man, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, though. He deserves it. I mean, I joke, but he's awesome to deal with. So I know that we're all happy for him, and at 11:30 we'll get the official announcement.
Yeah, if you're looking for that radio deal, good luck to you.
Well,
good luck to you in the industry. Or another industry that you pick that you can go chase contracts like that. Not going to happen.
No. No.
There's like one guy who's made that type of dough.
In this business?
Yeah. More than that. Actually, more than
Stern?
That.
Stern?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one. There's one of those guys.
And I don't think I can get away with his shtick. I think only he could get away with
that. Yeah. No, people tried. They have failed.
Yeah, they've tried.
They've all tried to be him. All right, we will come back. Let's do this right now. Let's make you a winner. We'll come back and talk a little college football with Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. But let's give you an opportunity to go see Nashville SC take on Indy 11 over at First Tennessee Park for the Eastern Conference semifinal of the USL playoffs. It'll be this Saturday after their big win over Charleston Battery. Let's say caller 4 will win a pair of tickets to that on Saturday. 737-1025. By the way, you gain an hour on Saturday too, so keep that in mind. So this could be a really cool Saturday night. Go to Nashville SC and then go do whatever you want to do afterwards, and you'll gain an hour. So caller 4 at 615-737-1025. We'll come back with Mitch on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday morning. We're sitting here live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. If you're looking for a place to have lunch today, you're down in the downtown area, come on over here. Burger and a beer for $12.50. Their food is really, really good here. We know firsthand. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside. Willie D will join us in a bit. We say hello and good morning to Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. Mitch, how you doing?
Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, you too. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did. Although, real quick, I know you guys are not, well-versed sports fans. I grew up a big fan of the New Jersey, now Brooklyn Nets, so I took the boy to Memphis to watch the Nets play the Grizzlies Sunday night, to watch them lose in overtime at the buzzer. So other than that, it was a great weekend.
Oh, wow. How's the crowd these days for Grizzlies games?
It wasn't great. I would say it seats about 18. I don't know what they announced. My guess is they had about 10,000 there. Kind of it's a 5 o'clock Sunday, more family friendly. I don't think expectations are high. Although Ja Morant's very good, fun young player. I suspect they'll get better as you know, if Morant continues to play well. It's actually my first time at the FedEx Forum. Been to Grizzlies game back when they played at the Pyramid, but had never been to the FedEx Forum. It's a nice place.
It's a very nice arena.
Yes.
I've been there for wrestling.
And a great location.
Yeah, great location.
Downtown.
Not to get too – comparing it to some other new arenas, there's a lot of seats in the upper deck. Almost too – compared to Bridgestone and some – it seems like there's too many of the seats are in the upper deck and in the end zones. There might be too many of the seats aren't great viewing, but maybe they're more affordable that way. Who knows? But definitely a cool place.
The good news for the FedEx Forum this college basketball season, those seats in the upper deck will probably be full.
Yes. Sky, obviously, optimism for the Tigers sky high.
No doubt about it. So I want to start in a weird way before we delve into some of these matchups and what took place over the weekend. What do you make? I'm sure you've seen the report out there, Adam Rittenberg with ESPN.com. What did you make of him tagging Jeff Fisher as a potential target for Vanderbilt, the next head football coach of Vanderbilt?
Well, you guys know how this thing works. I know Adam very well, actually. He used to write for Athlon Sports and a very good reporter, so I'm not saying, he could be true for all we know. But agents talk, people talk, and when you see lists like this, just because someone's name has been mentioned doesn't mean there's anything to it. Obviously, there's no opening right now. That goes without saying. I chuckled. I've always thought Jeff Fisher, in his younger days, would be a good college coach, even though he had not coached in college. Maybe he did right after he graduated from USC, but his energy, thought he'd be a good recruiter. But at this time, doesn't seem like it'd be the right fit for all parties involved there. So I did take note of that, kind of chuckled, and then, it seems to be people around the Internet not taking that one too seriously.
Yeah, it's just strange timing,
right?
You come off a win over a ranked team, and this comes out. I mean, you would think they lost to Missouri 48-0, and then this article comes out.
Right, but, it's in what Adam was doing. It wasn't a specific report.
Right, Jeff
Fisher. It was more the entire, for those of you who didn't see it, the entire landscape. It went all over all the schools that might have an opening in a few months and here and threw out a bunch of names for each school. So, you know, how these things work. So, definitely interesting.
No doubt about it. What did you make of Tennessee handling South Carolina in the fashion that they did?
Yeah, surprising. I'm not surprised they won the game. In fact, had I felt better about their quarterback situation going into the week, I probably would have picked Tennessee to win that game. Obviously, Jared Garantano played very well. Didn't get the start, which in a weird thing, you know, they started in the Wildcat, and then Trout gets the first true quarterback snap, but Garantano played very well. That game was just about big plays, and we talk a lot. That's what offenses need nowadays. It's very difficult to move up and down the field as 8 to 10, 14-play drives. When you can get the big plays, it helps out so much. And we've talked all year, they do have the weapons on the outside. They have the weapons at the running back. If they can get consistent play from the quarterback position and the offensive line can protect, they can score. And so that was definitely promising for Tennessee moving forward. And for South Carolina, a little bit alarming. The defense had played so much, you know, played well in the win over Georgia, keeping Georgia out of the end zone for the most part. Ryan Helinski has, you know, threw over, I think, 50 passes. Some accuracy issues there. They, too, have good receivers. You know, Brian Edwards made that fantastic catch. They start the game on a 75-yard drive. So it was an entertaining game, no doubt.
So it is interesting, after we talked so much about Jim Harbaugh in Michigan last Tuesday with you, that it was, I think, the very next day he comes out with a letter to the families. I'm not going to the NFL. Don't believe any of the reports. You know, that was kind of a crazy storyline. And then they just hammer Notre Dame on Saturday night.
Yeah, impressive win, no doubt about it. You know, weather impacted. I think the play calling for both teams, Michigan rarely threw the ball. And then when they saw Shea Patterson try to throw the ball left-handed on a lateral, I think they shut him down after that game, after that play pretty much. But very impressive and a much-needed win for Michigan. They played better in the second half against Penn State. You know, Michigan's not into moral victories and all that stuff, but it was noteworthy that they did look better in the second half in the loss at Penn State. And they looked good on defense, and it was a troubling loss for Notre Dame, but I give all the credit to Michigan, all the adversity, all the talk around them. For them to pick up a win in that fashion was very important for that program.
I was watching Paul Feinbaum this morning on Get Up. I don't know if you saw this.
No.
My goodness, he was just like, he was not very kind to Brian Kelly. I mean, he just said flat out Notre Dame like needs to move on from him. In fact, his words were, give him a gold watch and move on, because it's stagnant. You know, basically he's reached the ceiling at Notre Dame, and they need to go get Urban Meyer.
Well,
we all know Urban Meyer is going to land somewhere. I've never felt like Florida State because of Florida. I never felt like Michigan because of Ohio State. He doesn't want to mess with those fan bases. He wants to still be loved by them, and if he goes to those schools, he will no longer be loved by them. So he needs no attachments to those schools, and USC and Notre Dame do make sense because that keeps everybody happy.
Well, a couple things there. First of all, Paul Feinbaum last week said that you could find a better coach for Michigan by opening up your phone book, which really don't exist anymore, and picking a name out. So I guess if he thinks that lowly of Jim Harbaugh, what does he think of the guy that lost to Jim Harbaugh? So you can see where that's going. So I don't subscribe to that theory at all. You know, Brian Kelly won 10 games in 2017, won 12 games last year. They're 5-2 this year. They could win 8, 9, 10 games this year. Notre Dame's ceiling is a whole nother debate, whether or not you think they're a championship-caliber program. They did play in the playoff last year. They played in the BCS championship game in 2012. Now, you can argue whether or not you thought they should be there. But aside from that 4-8 aberration in 2016, they've been a consistently strong program. Now, the Urban Meyer talk, there's some Notre Dame people I follow, very well-connected people that I follow on Twitter who cover Notre Dame. Someone brought that up to them and basically said no chance of that happening. But if you guys recall, back in when Urban Meyer went to Florida after his undefeated season at Utah, he had the choice between Notre Dame and Florida and chose Florida. You know, he'd been a former assistant at Notre Dame under Lou Holtz, so there was the tie there, but he chose Florida. I don't know if there's any bridges that were burned by not picking Notre Dame at that point, but I will give you that. If Notre Dame did come open, which I don't think it will, and he wanted to get back in coaching, that seemed like it would be a perfect marriage if there are still bridges that haven't been burned.
Is it an amazing what Alabama and Clemson have done to all these fan bases and everybody else in the boosters of these big programs? It's like, unless you're winning it, unless you're playing for national championships, they are just not satisfied. I mean, just think about what you said. Notre Dame went undefeated the regular season last year. They went to the playoffs. And, yes, a lot of people, like me, didn't think they were that good. I thought they were a fraud, and they got smoked. But they were in the playoffs, and they went undefeated. You know, so it's not like they're not relevant. Michigan, now, does anybody remember the Rich Rodriguez and Brady Hoke days? I mean, it's just crazy because I know what they're doing. They're saying we should look just like them. And so it's like they go crazy if they're not winning it. And I think really, in just my opinion, I feel like Alabama and Clemson have done this to all these big, huge fan bases. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I see your point there. Let's throw some other teams in there. Georgia, who, you know, Kirby Smart appeared to be knocking down doors that Mark Richt couldn't quite knock down in a short amount of time. But now, if they don't make the playoff this year, it's like they've regressed. And what's going on there? Look at Texas A&M. We talk about them spending $75 million. They don't spend $75 million on a coach and $500 million on stadium renovations to go 8-4 every year. There's more programs spending more money than we've ever seen, and fan bases, boosters expect great returns on that investment. And you do the math. Not everyone can win, and then when you have two programs that are winning every year that are hurdles for everyone, it makes it that much more difficult. So that, you know, it's part of the reason we love the sport, part of the reason it's maddening, but it's just the landscape of college football right now.
Mitch Light from Athlon Sports is here with us on Darren Donick and Chase, and I guess we're going to have the battle for the SEC East this weekend, Georgia, Florida, the cocktail party taking place in Jacksonville. I mean, is that the right assumption in your mind that the winner of this game is going to be playing in Atlanta here in a month or so?
Yeah, Chase, I don't see, you know, how you could come up with any other scenario. There was talk a couple of weeks ago that Missouri, when they were 2-0, might be a team to watch out for, but clearly they're like an old college basketball team. Remember teams that just get smoked on the road and win at home all the time? That's kind of what they are in football this year. And so the winner of this game will have obviously a one-game lead over the team it beats, which is basically a two-game lead because they'd have a tiebreaker. And then Missouri with two losses, Tennessee with three losses. I don't consider either of those a serious threat there. So, yeah, this is a huge game for both teams, not just because the SEC East is at stake. It's because the winner will only have one loss, and the college football playoff remains in the picture. Now, both teams will have some, you know, some serious difficult games ahead of them, but it's fascinating. You know, heading into the season, would you guys have thought that the spread in this game would be so low? I think it's 6.
With Georgia by 6.
Right, but you know, Georgia clearly has not played up to what we thought we'd see from Georgia this year, and Florida looks like, you know, a legit top 10 team, if not better, despite having its backup quarterback and a suspect offensive line. So I think Georgia's my pick this week, but I wouldn't pick them to cover the spread there. I don't know if I trust their offense against that really good Florida defense, and Florida's getting a lot healthier on defense, on the defensive line, and in the secondary. So this one should be a defensive battle.
From a playoff standpoint, I believe that the question is not which of these two teams, you know, is better and beating each other, whatever, but which team do you think has the best shot of beating either LSU or Alabama in the SEC championship game?
Between Florida and Georgia, the right now, I don't know, Chase. I honestly don't know. I want to see more from both teams. I want to see more from Georgia. I think they haven't
shown a lot in the last few weeks.
Yeah,
they've shown a lot of bad.
Yeah, I think Georgia would be my answer because Georgia has a higher ceiling than Florida does, in my opinion. I still think Florida with its has some offensive, not inadequacies, that's not the right word, but I still don't trust their offensive line, although LSU and Alabama aren't as ferocious on defense as we usually seen. So That's a good question. I still think I'd say Georgia. I just think at their peak, they are better than Florida and would give Alabama slash LSU a more difficult game.
Another game that I am intrigued by is not in the SEC. It's a top 25 matchup. Game day is actually going to be in Memphis as undefeated SMU comes to Memphis to take on the Tigers. This is pretty cool that this matchup is taking place. And SMU, they've been fun to watch this year.
Yeah, two programs that have just a few years ago. Obviously, we all know SMU's issues going way back, but just a few years ago, were two of the worst in college football. And Memphis, you know, in about a 6-7 year period, has come so far. I like Memphis comfortably in this game. I think they're the better team. They do have a loss on their resume. Temple, kind of controversial, if you guys remember that call late in the game that was overturned. But they beat Tulane by 30. They also have wins over Ole Miss. They beat a good Navy team. So I think they're the better team. SMU with Shane Buechele at quarterback has been a great story. They're very good offensively. But I like Memphis at home. But I'm with you, Chase. Fun to see these two teams on a national stage.
Last thing, real quick. Excuse me, Mitch. I'm getting choked up.
Getting emotional, I know.
I am getting emotional. If I was a Wisconsin fan, I'm emotional. So we talked about the Badgers, right? Their incredible start and their defense and how good they looked. And then the last two games, it's like just a big splat. What do you make of that? And I guess, is it safe to say that they were a fraud all along or no?
I don't know how to answer that question because they were so dominant that I didn't care who they played. Like, you don't shut out four out of six teams in college football and then hold, you know, Michigan to, you know, dominate them like you did without being good. So, fraud's a strong word. They clearly weren't national championship good or playoff good. You know, losing at Ohio State 38-7 is no crime. It doesn't make you a bad team. You can still be a top 10 team and lose that game, but then when you throw in the Illinois loss, that's more troubling. I think they'll bounce back they get a week off against Iowa, Nebraska, Purdue, Minnesota. I think they will win out, although the Minnesota game will be difficult. I think they're a good team, just not a great team. I think we see their offensive limitations in the passing game, and if you can slow down Jonathan Taylor like Ohio State did, you can make them one-dimensional. But they are a very interesting team, Darren, because of how dominant they were early in the season.
You know what's interesting is no one, and I mean no one, I'm not even sure in that state, no one is talking about Minnesota.
PJ,
no one
is talking about Minnesota.
Right.
I don't know if you guys saw his passionate plea to get game day there next week for the Penn State game. Minnesota's undefeated. Penn State's undefeated. Both have a week off this week. They're playing at Minnesota next week. It'd be the biggest Minnesota football game I know in my lifetime. So I think the interesting thing, and PJ Fleck mentioned, that's they're the only Division I football team in that state. They're the only Division I basketball team in that state. Think of state
wow.
of Tennessee. I think there are 10 D1 basketball schools in Tennessee. There are four in Nashville. There's one in the entire state of Minnesota. So
Man.
His point was, hey, you'll have the entire state. I think he promised game day there'd be 4 million people at the game day. I don't think he can really deliver
that.
But PJ Fleck probably said a lot of things that aren't true on the recruiting trail. So you never know.
Oh, that's good. Hey, thanks for doing this. We really appreciate you understanding having to shuffle some things around today. So thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
No problem, Darren. Take care, guys.
All right, Mitch Light from Athlon Sports, also Vanderbilt sideline reporter. We will come back and wrap up the first hour. First, want to say thanks or congrats to Julie in Murfreesboro. And thanks for listening because you were lucky caller four. Julie is going to Nashville SC at First Tennessee Park on Saturday. So good job by Julie. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour next.
We're back, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming all around the world on that beautiful Game Nashville app that you hear us talk out of all the time, live at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena, Preds and the Chicago Blackhawks later on tonight. Coming up at 11:30, a major announcement by the Nashville Predators, and listen, the reports are out there. Roman Josi will sign a long-term extension, so that is what we're expecting. Some interesting news. Adam Schefter of ESPN is putting out there. It is NFL trade deadline day. We know there have been some big trades around the NFL that have happened over the course of the last couple weeks. But the Titans have reportedly worked out free agent quarterbacks Josh Johnson and Taylor Heineke. Thank you, Max. Heinicke. So they've worked out a couple quarterbacks. Okay. Don't really know what to read into that, if anything at all. But that is interesting with it being trade deadline day. And listen, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out anything. But, you know, I don't see them trading him. I'm wondering if it's a, you know, if it's injury related, something like that, with one of the QBs, but I don't know. So they've worked out a couple quarterbacks. We'll see what that means and keep monitoring that with trade deadline, the trade deadline around 3 o'clock today for the National Football League. But back to the Predators, they had an optional skate. They have recalled Colin Blackwell from Milwaukee. He will get his chance to maybe make an impact, but don't know about Matt Duchene, don't know about Philip Forsberg, what their status will be tonight. We talked about this yesterday, and I tweeted it out, Max, that the fact that they were able to go into Tampa, be down 2-1, tie it up, get the point, go to overtime, and then win it in overtime without their two best players in the lineup shows you just how good this team really is. And I think that really sent a message to the rest of the league.
Yeah, that's a special result right there, because ideally that's the only game the Preds play without both those guys in the lineup all year. Again, we don't really know anything about the severity of what Matt Duchene's dealing with right now, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But also
no,
Philip Forsberg expected back sooner rather than later. So if the Preds can go through an entire season with at least one of those guys in the lineup every night, they're going to be in good shape. And again, a lot of these East-West games, even between the elite teams of the East and West, like the Preds and the Lightning are, a lot of those games will go to overtime just because the loser point doesn't matter to the other team if you're on the other side of the league standings. So it's good to get that done, but to win it there is even better.
Yeah, absolutely. And then tonight is one of those, you know, we've talked about games like Detroit and some others that they've struggled, Phoenix or Arizona, that they've struggled against that they probably shouldn't. You know, Chicago is not the same Chicago they were a few years ago, but they still have talent. They're trying to figure out the goaltending situation. It's a Central Division matchup. And, oh, by the way, these two teams don't like each other. So I expect this to be a pretty playoff-like game later on tonight. And, of course, it'll be coming off the heels of the big announcement that's coming up at 11:30. David Poile is going to join us at 12:15, so we'll have a lot of questions to ask him, you know, when they announce the Roman Josi deal. Again, if you are just joining us, the reports that are out there, Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, that it is an 8-year max deal worth just north of $9 million per year, making him the third highest paid defenseman in the NHL. And Pierre LeBrun also reports that he believes it includes a full no-movement clause, which Nashville typically does not give those out. Pecorine, the only player to get the full no-move clause in his career. So Pierre goes on to say that talks heated up over the last 3 to 4 days, and it looks like Roman Josi is going to be rewarded for a lot of hard work that he's had with this franchise, and the captain is going to be here for many, many years to come. So we'll have a lot to get into with that. Again, the press conference coming up at 11:30, we will carry that for you and have much, much more as we continue. Willie Donick, Darren McFarland will be back in a few. They've gone down for the open locker room for morning skate, so we'll see what they have to say as well. And we'll have much more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.